Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Western Plains Cultural Centre podcast series, Who We Are. Today I'm chatting with Andrew Glassop, our manager. Andrew, can we start by giving us an indication of how many years you've been at the centre?
Oh, at the centre? I thought, how many years I've been at this place? I've been here for, I suppose, just over 4.5 years.
Okay, and where have you come from?
Well, it's a long and complicated story. Like, I think a lot of people who end up in this industry get there through sort of many different varied ways. I began life as a teacher in history and English, moved overseas to sort of experience overseas life, forgot to move back for 10 years, while I was over there, sort of took the advantage to move out of education formally in the classroom and explored different ways of delivering education outside the classroom. I was always interested in sort of non-classroom learning and what the possibilities for it are, and eventually ended up working at a museum in Singapore where I ran the Education Public Programs Unit. That was the Asian Civilizations Museum. It's at www.acm.org.sg. Very interesting place. A fabulous museum, one of the big three in Singapore, and that was a great learning experience. But, so that's... After I left there and came back to Australia, I came to work at the even more wonderful Western Plains Cultural Centre.
Fantastic. All right, can you give us a brief overview of your role, typical day-to-day activity?
The position that I'm in, like many of the people who work here, is a very atypical position in the industry. I was just down at a conference in Albury, and one of the people there, I knew them and they introduced me to someone new and they said, oh, this is the director of the gallery in Dubbo. And I said, no, I'm not the director, I'm the manager. And they went, oh, no, that's just names. That's just a different word. And it's really not, because we have a gallery, that's true, but we also have a museum. We also have a community arts centre, which has got, all told, 14 spaces for the community to rent. So we are neither one nor the other. So my typical day sort of runs across all of those. You know, you could be dealing with the cultural program 1 minute and then dealing with block toilets the next.
Yep.
But in a general sense, I'm very much on the, I suppose I'm the conduit between the people who work here and our major funders, whether they be council, Dubbo City Council, which is the major funding body for us, or other people such as sponsors or other stakeholders like Arts New South Wales. So I'm a major conduit for getting information backward and forwards between those groups, and also am responsible for, in a sense, allowing people the freedom within their own position to do their job and to make sure they've got the resources as best I can to be able to do it, and also to make sure that the building doesn't fall over, which, as an old school building that was first put up in 1917, it tends to want to do most of the time.
All right. So a very diverse role. What would you say is the most interesting aspect of it?
The block toilets.
Yep. Yeah. Of course, they stand out.
They do, they do. Now, look, it is, it's a position where you're constantly learning, and this is where I suppose there's not many, if you're a young person sort of looking at, oh, what can I do to prepare myself for this position? I would say probably being a teacher is one of the best, because teachers are remarkably versatile creatures. You learn a lot being a teacher. You learn a lot about working with people. You learn a lot about deadlines, and you learn a lot about objectives and being focused on getting a particular objective done. I suppose that's where the most satisfaction lies in. I no longer get that day-to-day face-to-face with people, and I do sometimes miss dealing with schools, of getting kids in and running a really good program and seeing the kids, you know, all their little faces light up and all that sort of stuff, until you see like a snotty-nosed teen who doesn't want to be there, and then you think, I'm well out of that. So I do miss out on that, but really I suppose as you get sort of further and further away from that, the goals become, I suppose, bigger and bigger, and they become much more long-term. So, you know, I don't think so much on the day-to-day nitty-gritty of what needs to be done, but I try and think about, well, you know, where do we really want to be in 2 years' time, or where do we want to be in 5 years' time, or what staff do we need, and how do I convince the people who have the purse strings to let go so that, you know, we can get the staff that we need. So I suppose that's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there something that you're working on right now that you're particularly excited about at the centre?
As I said, it's a lot of my thinking is quite long term. But I still get that childlike excitement when a new exhibition comes. Yeah. Like, you know, I am looking forward to the Education Resource Centre mm-hmm. opening. That's been, its code name was Xanadu for many a year. So I think, like, it's really exciting to see that. I'm just really excited by the fact that the staff that we have here, the people who work in the building, are really committed to getting things done and not so much committed to pretending they're doing things for the first time. Mm-hmm. That's what excites me, that we're really, and I don't know whether it's the fact that we're out in Dubbo and we're sort of a bit more removed from some of the more fervent art centres, like, you know, closer to the coast and the metropolitan areas, or if it's just the particular quirk of this organisation. But what I'm excited by is the things that we do that no one else is doing. So I still search in vain for podcasts from other art galleries in Australia, mm-hmm. let alone other regional galleries, mm-hmm. let alone regional New South Wales galleries in the Western Plains.
Yes.
they're doing nothing at all, as far as I can tell. And so that excites me. I suppose what I'm excited by is what we're doing at the present, mm-hmm. which is, you know, above and beyond what we would normally be expected to do.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay, to finish off, you've already mentioned a couple of skills that you think are crucial to your position. Is there anything in particular that would stand out in someone looking to attain a managerial role in such an institution?
You have to be a believer.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be a believer in the things that you don't believe in.
Yeah.
what I mean is that very often as you know, in the hierarchy, if something goes wrong mm-hmm. or if the public are unhappy with a particular show that we put on, then I'm the one who is going to face that criticism and I'm the one who has to answer that criticism. Mm-hmm. And very often, I mean, the art world is an incredibly diverse thing, and I said I do get excited when a new exhibition comes, no matter what it is, I want to go and have a look at it. But that doesn't mean that I like everything that we have in the exhibition spaces. If we did, you know, there'd be a lot of rugby league memorabilia shows. And so very often you have to stand up and you have to defend works that you particularly may not want to defend. But and you have to be able to do that, and you have to be able to do that committed to the fact that there is, I suppose, you know, a higher truth in art, and that, you know, not everyone sees the same thing. So, you know, if that's a skill, like having a hide like a rhino, you have to be able to take criticism mm-hmm. and to understand that criticism is part of the job. You have to be able to, I suppose, have a fairly low sitting stress level.
Yep.
So if you sort of get edgy, you know, if at the slightest, you know, if things don't go according to plan in your life, this is probably not the position for you, because very little goes according to plan. You make all the plans in the world, but human beings tend to get in the road.
Yep.
So if you can't think on your feet or be able to deal with situations as they come up and just go, well, look, that's the situation we're in now, what can we do? Let's make another plan. Let's try and end, you know, put that one into place, and then if that one falls over, then we'll just make another one and we'll go on. So, yeah, it would be those skills. Mm-hmm. As I said, we're very different to our director of someone that's just a director of an art gallery, where you would say, yeah, look, you need to know fine arts, you need to have a degree in that. I don't have a degree in fine arts. I'm a history-based person. But I don't think that that's a particular impediment to what I do. It might be if you wanted to run just an art gallery, but as I said, this is not just an art gallery.
Yep. Okay, to conclude, is there anything that you'd like to add about your industry or think that could be improved?
Here we go. Look, and this is anyone who's spoken to me for any length of time, because I'm quite dull and I always say the same thing. The industry, to me, has to get its collective head out of its collected, you know what,
mm-hmm.
With regards to energy use. Current economic conditions and the cost of power are not compatible with the, well, I believe to be quite arbitrary conditions we've put on the preservation of objects. I've done a bit of a survey of the conditions that are given to us in touring agreements, touring contracts that were sent. And if we have, we have five spaces, and so we often have five different touring companies with their product in our space.
Yeah.
If we were to have, and I won't name the two organisations, but two organisations in at the same time, we would have to run our air conditioning at 21 degrees Celsius plus or minus zero. The industry needs to sort out whether it's simply there to serve the object. I don't think it is. The industry is here to serve people.
Yep.
And in order to serve people, it needs to do it in a way that doesn't contribute to the economic collapse of the entire industry. And that's something that I think the industry really hasn't got its head around. I think the industry is very much committed to the, you need to look after this because these objects are important. And yes, they are important, but we make harsh economic judgments on people's medical conditions. I knew a guy many, many years ago when I was at university who was researching people who had surgery who were old, and he would go in and he would interview them afterwards about the quality of life. And what he was doing was gathering data to say, well, we've done the surveys, and yes, you're 80 and we can give you this operation, but afterwards the survey says your quality of life is not going to be worth the money we spend on it, so we're not going to do it. And that's in economic, where resources are limited, that's what you have to do. You have to be able to make decisions somewhere. And the industry is not at that level. They're not fronting up to that thing as, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to continue to collect objects with no thought of how long we're going to keep them for and what conditions we're going to keep them in? Or are we going to say, okay, it is acceptable for us to lose 1% of our collections every year, or to allow some degradation to take place because that is economically viable for us? And I think that's something that the industry does need to consider.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much, Andrew.